Welcome to the Exploring Unschooling podcast. For countless parents, the journey to unschooling has redefined childhood and transformed their family relationships. Are you curious? Together, let's explore what living and learning looks like without school.
Hello, everyone. I'm Anna Brown with Living Joyfully, and today I'm joined by my co-hosts, Pamela Riccia and Erica Ellis. Hello.
Hi. Hello.
Before we get started, I wanted to encourage you to visit the Living Joyfully shop. There you'll find all of Pam's books, our growing catalog of courses, and you can join our online community and also book coaching calls with us. We are really having fun creating this one-stop shop to support you as you navigate relationships with your loved ones and deep dive into your unschooling journey. You can follow the link in the show notes or just go to livingjoyfullyshop.com. So today we're going to be talking about deschooling. It seems that lately it's kind of popping up again, and it's a word that's maybe reaching a bit of a wider audience as people start to pull away from traditional schools, really for a variety of reasons, but people have questions about it. So we thought it would be helpful to talk about it again. And I know we've talked about it before, but just keep digging in about, you know, what it looks like, what it can help us with, how it's an ongoing process. So I think we all have a lot to say about this, but Erica, would you like to get us started?
I would, yes. So I think deschooling really has become kind of a buzzword in homeschooling and alternative education spaces. As people are really looking at the ways that school isn't working for their children, this word comes up. And most of the time, the word deschooling is referring to a process of examining schoolish assumptions and beliefs and questioning those. So kind of getting out of a school mindset, as well as decompressing and healing from any time that has been spent in school. And I'll give you a couple of examples of schoolish assumptions and beliefs that you might start to question during deschooling so that you know what kind of things we're talking about. So like believing that learning can only happen in a classroom, or that reading has to be happening by a certain age, that children need to be around a bunch of other children their same age, that mistakes are to be avoided, that grades are the most important thing, that everyone should be following the same educational path, that you can't be successful without college, that children have to be made to do things that they don't want to do, and that there are certain topics that they need to learn at a certain age, or even that children need to be taught in order for them to learn. And so you can see just by, you know, listening to those, that these are major mindset shifts that are happening. Deschooling is a mental and physical transition away from school for us as parents and for our kids, and all of the thought processes and choices that are wrapped up in that transition. And I know that today we want to dive into a few important points about deschooling. First, that it looks different for children and parents, and we can explore what that can look like. And we also really want to emphasize, like Anna was saying, that this is not a one and done checklist kind of thing where you could check it off. Anytime a belief comes up or a new phase in our child's life comes up, more deschooling can happen. I heard a question recently that was something like, is it okay if I feel like we need to go back to deschooling? Is it okay that our life is still looking like this? And I think, you know, the mom was really referring to the amount of time it seemed to be taking for her child to decompress and heal from his time in school. It seemed like he wasn't interested in the usual things, which is just so common. And so I think it's valuable to envision deschooling not as a phase with an endpoint, and to really sink into allowing that transition to take the time it does and be ready to question your beliefs and give plenty of time and space for healing along the way as things come up for your family. And I know you both probably have a lot to say about this topic, so I'm excited to see where our conversation goes.
I will say, like, just a million things bubbled up while you were talking there, Erica. It's like, oh my gosh, yes. Maybe I'll start from the kids' point of view, since I'm the only one who has kids in school.
Yeah.
Going through this deschooling process for them. And yes, I mean, if I had to put kind of a time-ish line on it, just like at least a year, like even if my kids were only in for a handful of years, my eldest was in grade 4 or 5, I don't even remember, but one of those. But yes, like the messages that they came home with, like my daughter who enjoyed school, I was actually a little bit surprised when she said, "Yeah, sure, I prefer to stay home. That's great." But, she had got the message that she wasn't a very good reader. And so when she wasn't being forced to read, it's like, I don't read. And, don't put books within 10 feet of this poor girl. For those first months, because it's like, oh, I don't have to do that. Okay, I'm going to step back from that. And I mean, I wrote a whole article, we'll link to that, about her journey with reading. And it was at least like to watch her step back from that and then to come to it herself was super fascinating and interesting to the moment when she's like, I'm a bookworm. She declares that, like, which is, you could just see kind of the connection she's making to like, oh, a year or so ago, I hated books. I hated reading. I would swear I couldn't read, like all those pieces. But to give her the space to come to that, a lot of de-schooling in there. Same with my son. His challenge was writing. And I remember when, he picked up a pencil and it was like at least a year after he left school. He's like, I haven't written by hand in like ages. And it was a choice to finally pick it up. But so much trauma and crap all wrapped up in that from his school experience. Those were a little bit more obvious to me, but there is the whole host of other stuff of just about the environment and stuff that we might not know about. So to give them that space to just decompress. And we've got lots of stories in the archive of the podcast, even young adults talking about like, I laid on the couch for a year. I just like needed to really just decompress entirely. And for us to judge, like, oh, your experience wasn't that bad. Why haven't you recovered this, this quickly, et cetera? It takes as long as it takes. And that was a fascinating thing for me that ties to what you were saying, Erica, that there is no like timeline. Why is this coming back? And why do I feel like we still have some more de-schooling to do? For me, and I talked about it in my first book, Free to Learn, which is my five biggest de-schooling aha moments or paradigm shifts that were most valuable for me. But the fascinating thing is that where was I going with that? Oh, yes, that for me, the kind of light bulb moment that I'm kind of through my initial de-schooling phase was when I didn't really care if I was done de-schooling at all. It's like, oh, this is just part of life. Stuff comes up. I've got another layer to peel back. Oh, gee, this has been my work all along. And it's like, oh, I haven't really had to peel back a lot of stuff lately. I think we're kind of unschooling. We're just like jumping right in there. All's good. But it no longer was that checklist, another school mindset to work through, right? It's like, oh, we need to do this and this. And, I can say I'm an unschooler when my de-schooling's done, like all those messages that it's like, oh, that's what you're going to be shedding for the next little while.
My
Right? Like,
goodness.
and how much of the, like for our kids, and that was another piece for my kids that season was, for them, because they were a little bit younger, 9 and 7, and my youngest had only been in for a few months. But for them, it was really diving into play because they had so much time at school that they had missed in engaging with the things that they really like to do at home. And I call this in my journey book kind of the belly of the whale transition because we really cocooned at home for probably at least 6 months to a year, just like regrounding ourselves, just decompressing from all that. We got to be out there. We got to do things on everybody else's timetable, just kind of exploring what our timetable looked like. I thought we'd be out doing all these things because we can now. But no, really, just decompress and just sink into the things that we love to do while I was also peeling back all these layers. I didn't even realize how many questions, things that I had just absorbed of this is the way things are. So I know we have all, I'm sure, suggested many times when you come to unschooling or you decide, you know what, I want to try out this thing to really give it that window, give it that 6 months to a year. Like nothing's going to happen that after a year, year and a half, 5 years, your kids can't go back to school. Like nothing like that. Not to think of it as this is an end all, you know, a life decision that we're making, you know, to take the kids out of school. This is just something we're trying out, but give it that window. Give yourself and your kids that window to decompress, to do some serious deschooling and just explore what does life look like instead, right?
I mean, I think it's so huge because so my kids never went to school. And so I would say what my experience with deskilling is much more about me, but I think it really fits for everyone, whether you're taking your kids out or not. So much of it is about our own journey because I was in school for a very long time and really, you know, I didn't have a bad experience, you know, whatever. And I absorbed these different things from it. But like that checklist you went through, Erica, it's just like, there's so many things that we don't even realize that we've absorbed and taken in as the one way, the only way. And so while I was able to see my kids really just, you know, exploring, learning all of these pieces, I found for me, there was layer after layer after layer that would bubble up for me. And a lot of times it would be maybe a transition age or something, you know, some kind of milestone that passed that looks a little bit different when you're not in school or when you're not in certain environments, that I would be like, okay, what's bubbling up for me here, and have to do that work to pause and lean back into my kids, look at what they're doing, look at our life, you know, as it is versus how it's comparing. And so I think that's such a big piece of it, is just really understanding that it's going to keep bubbling up because we have been trained that this is the one way that it works and the one way that it can happen. But wow, when you can open that up even just a little bit, you see your kids healing, you see your own healing, you see generational trauma healing. Like it's just so powerful to just give that space. Like you said, Pam, just don't put anything on it. Just give it some space.
Yeah, I think it's like it really sinks in how individual this kind of deschooling journey would be for each child and each parent. And right, like if we're thinking there's a right way to do it, that's going to be frustrating, you know. And so for kids, like you can look at that same list of beliefs and see, you know, if a child's been in school for a while, they're going to be picking up on a lot of those beliefs themselves, but you know, from their angle, from the student angle. And so it could be things like you were talking about of I'm not good at this, or you know, even as terrible as I'm stupid or I'm not good at things. And I mean, those are really heavy messages that they may have internalized. And so when there is that space now that they're not being controlled, not being told, you know, to do all these things, it's just space to kind of start asking, like, who am I now? You know, and that's big stuff. Like, that's really big stuff. And so it makes sense that it can take time. It makes sense that it might look like doing nothing. And I think that panics, you know, some parents at first because they're used to the school schedule and all of this activity happening and so much where it's so busy, never time for anything. And deschooling could look really like the opposite of that. It could look like, we're doing nothing. We're just sitting here. They just want to watch TV. But if you can think of it almost from like a trauma lens of like, this is a healing that needs to be happening, then maybe it's easier to give more space to that. And just know, you know, not every child is going to have that response to this transition, but some will. And so, you know, everyone is different.
Yeah. And I mean, we've seen things in the network where people's children, I mean, 4 years down the road will start, you know, remembering things or start, you know, things can happen. So it is so unique, that journey. And I think I want to just speak also briefly to if you haven't pulled them out yet, but you're in this situation where something's rubbing, which may have brought you here, you know, to listen to this. like this is really just a call to really trust yourself, because there's some messages, because I think all of us, for different reasons, even though my kids never went to school, I thought they were going to, you know, I got hit with these messages of like, something's not right here. Something's not going to work here. This doesn't feel good to progress along this path that I thought was going to be okay. And, you know, for you, Pam, I'm sure there was messages along the way. And so I think too, part of this is just really starting to trust in that voice inside of us. I think that's part of the layer of deschooling too, is just getting to, you know, your kids, you know them way better than any teacher, any school, any institution, you know what feels good to your family. And so just really that's starting to build your why, you know, when you're going to make a big decision to pull them out or not put them in, because sometimes it's that, right? It's this preschooler that I don't think I can put them in, or they don't want to go, or they go for a bit and then it feels terrible. And they're crying, and we're being told, oh, just leave them. They'll be fine later on. You know, it's like, no, you know, if your heart's telling you something different, part of this is just setting aside those outside voices to really tune into what you know.
That really sounds, because I actually like my journey. And it, you know, took a while before I, you know, discovered even the world of homeschooling. I would tell my kids, sorry, you know, you have to go to school. Like, let's try and make this, you know, as fun as possible or whatever. But it was like, for me, the root of it was, to speak to what you were talking about, Anna, was like, when something didn't feel right to me, I would just continue to kind of question the premises. Like, okay, but why? And then why do we, I mean, you get to the have to do. Why do we have to do that? Okay, so if the context, the constraint is that school has to be part of our lives, how can we, you know, work with that? So, I mean, I was working with schools. I was giving presentations to teachers. I was talking with principals, you know, just doing all the things there. Just exactly trusting ourselves when something is not feeling right, and just being, for me, open and curious. You know, it even goes back then. Like, it's like, but, you know, why isn't this working? You know, why isn't this a fit? What's up here? How can we, you know, play around, as we were talking about before, you know, with Kendall, how can we play with the environment, right? And it was in that constant research, that constant trying to find, like, how this might work for us, that I came across an article that mentioned homeschooling. And I'm like, what? Heck is that? And is that legal? Because that sounds awesome. And oh my gosh, it was not long before I found out it was legal. It was not long before we said, let's try this. Because, like, I mean, that's the piece. Like, just follow what you're feeling, trust what you're feeling, and start asking questions. Because it's okay to ask questions. And you're right, we're not going to be arrested for our thoughts. You know, we can question those like fundamental things that just feel so true, like that we only learn when somebody needs to teach us something. How are we going to learn something if somebody doesn't teach us something? Oh, but my gosh, we could spend an hour talking just about that question. But ask yourself questions. Just be open to the fact that there may be other answers than the one that we're so used to, the one that we've just kind of absorbed growing up, or the one that we were explicitly told, you have to go to school because you need to learn these things, right? It can be kind of really shaking our foundations to start asking these kinds of questions. But oh my gosh, it is so valuable. And to, like, for me, it's baby steps and it's playing with things, right? It's like, oh my gosh, you know, is that a possibility? We played with, oh, look, yeah, we can bring them home. We can see how it goes. You know, Rock and I talked about that in an episode a long time ago. But that is the really interesting thing. Like, when something doesn't feel right, just keep at it. Keep trying to figure something out. When something's not working for anyone in our family, for any of our kids, just keep diving into that and learn more and just grow your own web of understanding about what's going on. It's just, it is a very interesting journey. And yeah, I love that little to the call to adventure. Like, what is it that's just not sitting well for us, and what can we do about that?
Right. Yeah,
Cool.
I like how you describe yours as like being playful and taking these little steps. 'Cause for me, it felt more like just whooshing along, this kind of knowledge explosion and all this, the big mindset shifts that happened for me in kind of those beginning year when I first started reading about unschooling. And so it didn't feel slow in my mind or like I was taking baby steps, but right, it's just like this, it's a different, that's why it's the unschooling journey. It's a different thing that maybe gets us to start thinking about it. And so in my case, it was that feeling of like, I don't think I can put this child in preschool. That's step one. Like, what happens next? And right. And so I think that deschooling phase, like if we can think of it like that, if we can give ourselves space to be learning without worrying about all the little details, like how's it gonna turn out and what do I need to be doing? And like all of getting ourselves worked up in that question that I hate, which is it all gonna work out? And just trying to stay in the moment, with our process and letting our kids have their own process, like so much goodness can come from that deschooling phase, I think. So much learning, so much more connection, so much more trust. But right, it's gonna take that kind of putting your worrying, thinking brain, like all of that kind of stuff, to the side a bit, to give all of the family members space.
Right. And I think acknowledging too that it is a big step. It's a big step to kind of step out of the norm and the whatever, because when you said that, I don't like it either, the is it all going to work out kind of thing. We don't know that about school either. And if you're getting messages that something's not working for your child in school, it's probably leaning on the side of there's going to be problems down the road. But I think why people stay is it's, well, but that's what I'm supposed to do. There's maybe some safety in thinking it's not all coming to us. And so that's part of the deschooling too, to realize they're on their own unique journey. Like you, it's really is about keeping focused on the moment and what's in front of you and what does this child need in this moment and what do you need to heal and to reconnect. And for us, it's the priority is always the relationship. So we'll always come back to that when we're talking about it. But I think just give yourself that space and not walk too far down that road, because like you said, Pam, it could be 5 years and then you go back into a more formal or environment of school or something else. And there's no right or wrong way, no one path. But I think the more you tune into your inner voice, like that's going to lead you and your child just, again, to keep that connection strong, to get the most out of whatever the experiences. So just listen to those niggling pieces. But I do just want to acknowledge, I get it. That's why we're here. That's why we have a network that supports people, because it is a little scary to step outside of the norm, more so for some people than others, depending on your whole family situation, the support you have in your life. So yeah, it's interesting to think about and just baby steps and taking the leap. Sometimes it's taking the leap. Either way, it's okay.
Oh yeah, it depends on what lens and framework you're thinking about it, because it does feel like a huge leap. And okay, so many things. I think we need to remember them all. First, okay, let's go back to that question. I remember one of my big kind of aha moments or paradigm shifts while I was deschooling was from that question, is it all going to work out? To like, oh, if I focus on this moment in front of me and we work through this moment in front of me, and then we have another moment and we work through that moment, it's like, oh, but we are just compounding a bunch of moments in which we worked through things. So we will just continue to do that however long into the future I want to worry about it. So that really helped me get back to the moment, rather than tripping into the future. So, well, okay, so if I want everything to work out in the end, well, darn it, I better make this moment work out. Now, another piece that bubbled up is, I remember so much the journey of deciding to take the kids out of school, and how Oh my gosh, finally, when I took them out, it felt like, okay, phew, we finally decided. We made this big leap. And it felt like that was the end. We're done now, right? But literally, that's like the start of the de-schooling. It's like, oh my gosh, there is actually so much more. This is actually basically kind of the call to adventure that, okay, we're homeschooling now. Again, keeping it light enough that it's like, oh my God, I have committed to my kids being home with me for like their entire educational career, or however you want to frame it at that time. But it's so when you can take that pressure off and the weight of expectations that we can put on ourselves. But yeah, like even though we feel like, oh, we're done, we finally decided, we did the thing, yay, we can live now. It's actually the beginning of the journey. Like, I think that was another kind of, oh, realization along the way. So fun. But yeah. And then the other thing I just wanted to mention, what I learned when I was home with them and deep in this de-schooling was how valuable it was to look to my kids. Because like they really were my guides on this journey. Because yes, I talked about some of the messages that they had absorbed and that they were de-schooling through, but with this space now to be themselves, to choose what they're doing, so much that I saw in action with them, eventually I was like, oh, but I could do that too. Like, so I was giving them all that space, and then I was like, Pam, you need to do this, like get all that stuff. How am I gonna fit? Nope, you got to get this stuff done. Like, to realize that I could look to them and see the way they were approaching their days. And it's like, oh, like what a beautifully human way to, go at their days. That when they were doing something that they enjoyed doing, I could see them, like mistakes were no big deal. They were just, oh, that didn't work, I'm going to try something else. That would have been like the end of me. I was, oh, okay, I can't do that. If I'm not going to be good at that, let me go slink over here and do something else, right? Because obviously, like, and that because I had, as you mentioned, it, many more years of school where I had absorbed that messages in that long list you were talking about, Erica, that mistakes are bad. And so there was just so many things that I could learn through watching my kids that really helped me in my de-schooling journey. Just to notice the thing, oh, like to realize, to open up that these things were actually questions. They weren't definitive. They weren't, kids can do that and adults have to do this, right? To realize that, oh, it's just about being human, and we all have these choices on our plate, and how cool is that, right?
Yeah, it feels like some of these beliefs are almost like a little barrier between you and the person, or the connection, or between you and the reality of the present moment, and questioning some of them feels kind of like removing that barrier. Or and I feel like that can happen when the kids are still in school. Like if you're feeling like your connection with your kid is not, that strong connection, like I feel like these kind of beliefs might be putting these barriers in between. So when you can notice those things of like, what am I believing right now? It's almost like the role of mom and the role of student child, and all of these different rules that we have kind of internalized because of our time, living in the culture. It's like once you realize, oh, I'm believing that learning only happens in a classroom, and so that's why I'm treating my child like this, like it's the most important thing, and that's why, and so, right, I really like how much it increases connection and strengthens the relationship when you start questioning these beliefs.
Okay, and something you just said there made me about the roles, I think, is what kind of sparked this, but it I feel like we're handed a lot of you know, fear or this belief that we can't do it and you know, that we can't handle it, or, you know, especially if our kids maybe have special needs or have some special things going on with them. No, the experts, you know, this is just something that's drilled into us in school and in our culture. And so again, I think the call for me is to, I'm with this child 24/7. Like, I know, and I can get resources and I can bring other things in, but I just always watch for if someone's trying to separate you in that way, trying to say that you don't know your child, or that, you know, what, oh no, they can push through that because they need this thing, you know? And so just watch for that messaging, because I think it's so strong. And so a big piece of this de-schooling, I think, is like owning our agency, you know, kind of taking back, like, wait a minute, I do know who I am. I know who my child is, and I'm going to advocate for them. And again, whatever that environment is, whether they stay in an environment that's in school or not, it can really change things. But like you saw, Pam, you can go into that environment and try to advocate, but it just has its own set of, you know, rules. And if you don't fit right into that, it you know, it can be really hard for kids.
Yeah, it's its own set of constraints. And yeah, that's why I, you know, spent years. How can we, inside these constraints, try to make this manageable? So yeah, very interesting. And I really, I'm still back to the kids as guides. And another reason why, like, when you choose to try this out, commit to it, I think that larger window is so valuable. Like, we kind of say at least 6 months, but, you know, a year, like,
really
give it the space, really a year. Like, as you, you've heard us all saying, yeah, about a year, just as in what our experience was, not as in that's our recommendation, but through experience, that seems to be, you know, at least the kind of minimum span. But what it does, like you were saying, is it gives us the opportunity, as we're observing our kids and connecting with them and hanging out with them, to see how learning unfolds. Because, you know, so often we're deschooling as in, you know, our kids are not going to be in a classroom. I know how they learn in a classroom. They've got a curriculum and a teacher who tells them, like, okay, how else are they going to learn? But we need that space to see the learning unfold, the natural learning unfold, to give them the time to dive into their interests and the things that they're interested in, and to see the connections, like to see the next interest and what they brought from that, to see like all the different things growing and how their lives are unfolding. And through that, you just see the learning that's happening. So you need the space for that to, it helps you kind of trust the process. It helps you understand the process. Like, you can, Kendall talked about it too. You can read the books and you can understand it intellectually, but what a world of difference when you actually see it unfolding with your own children. Like, that is just a deeper understanding, because you've got more connections now. Like, I had these three things that made sense from the book or from the group, wherever, but then to be able to add context to that from your own life, is, it really solidifies it. It becomes a truth, right? That is part of the de-schooling process as well, is to, like, okay, this all makes so much sense to me, and I'm going to embrace this and jump in. And now let's actually see how it unfolds for our family. Because that's the other really fascinating thing, is in a classroom, everybody kind of needs to adapt to the classroom process, right? They have their procedures, they have their methods, and we need to adapt to that. Whereas when we're unschooling, we have that space. We don't have 30 kids. You know, we've got our handful of kids. And we all of a sudden see how different each child is. And that is another beautiful part of the de-schooling journey, is to see what learning looks like. Like, how do they like to learn something? When they have an interest, how do they dive into it? How do they deal with, like, frustration? That's a fascinating thing. The one of, I think you mentioned, Erica, like, they won't do hard things right? If we don't make them do things, right? Oh my gosh, when your kid has the space to do the things that they are actually interested in, you will see them hit hard things. You will sometimes see them move on to something else completely. You will sometimes see them push right through as hard through tears and frustration and anger and all the pieces and still go at it. Like, oh, it is just beautiful to see how different it is for each child. And again, then you start to apply that to yourself too. It can look completely different for me, my partner, you know, it's just, it just kind of opens your eyes to humanness, I think.
It feels more like seeing, like getting to know your child as who they are rather than kind of seeing them through this, you know, school lens or student lens or like, you know, the deficit focus and all the kinds of things that going to school makes us focus on. And just thinking about like the fun of all that, I was thinking like de-schooling also can be super fun. Like I know sometimes you talk about, you know, when they first leave school, like just think about it as summer vacation extended, you know, just keep going with that kind of mindset, because it's like, if school didn't exist, what would you do? What are the things that are fun to do together? What are the things that would make you feel more connected? What are the things that your child has been just waiting to be able to do and hasn't had the time to do? So all of that can actually be really fun. There is this, you know, there's the healing and there's the all this mental, you know, the thinking work that happens. But there's also just the fun and love of like getting reconnected and actually just doing the things that you all love to do.
That actually reminds me, yeah, sorry, but that just reminds me of like maybe what you were talking about with the woman who asked the question. Like sometimes we're kind of like, is this okay? Like, we're having too much fun. Is this okay? And it's like, yes, it's okay. You know, so it, I do think that's a piece of it.
And yeah, that's exactly it. Like, you know, I said we were cocooning, and like for many people, that image would be somber, and you know, they're not going out and doing things. Oh my gosh, they need to recover quickly. Yet, holy bananas, that was a lot of fun. We had so much fun. We learned so much about each other. We just had fun doing things together. And yes, thanks for the reminder. Yeah, you know why that extended summer vacation came? Because they left in March break. So it was a school holiday. They were home. And I'm like, okay, if we're going to do this, they don't even need to go back. Why do they have to go back and finish the school year? And Rocco's like, yeah, that's true. So we went and asked them and they didn't. So, and then that's what helped me. It's like, okay, you know, think of it as an extended summer vacation. We don't need school stuff or anything, you know, right through to the fall. I'll worry about back to school season when that time comes around. But that was a long enough stretch that, yes, like we were in it. We were enjoying ourselves, even if it didn't look anything at all like what I thought it would the day that I went around and asked them if they would rather stay home. Like, I just learned that you actually don't have to go to school. Would you like to? Oh, yeah. So, yeah, that was a really helpful way for me to frame it. Another way, and I think I've got a blog post about that, that came to me was thinking of it as a season of Saturdays, because within there, because Saturdays are often the days when we're not trying to get our kids up and we're not like, oh, they're sleeping in, they should be like up doing things. Like, okay, now they're not going to school, but they should be up doing things. So what would Saturday, you know, if you had a whole, you know, months and months of Saturdays in front of you, what would you do? And then, yeah, that helped me get to, as you were talking about, Eric, what are the fun things that we like to do? We ended up going to the parks a lot in our cocooning, but it felt like a cocoon because we weren't in the midst of a whole bunch of people, right? Like, so we just kind of took our cocoon with us and we went out to the park and would just spend hours by the creek, looking at the trees, walking around. We could play at the playground in there during school hours. So there was nobody there, but we could stay as long as we wanted. And it was, we left when we wanted to leave instead of looking at the clock and saying, okay, now we have to go. So yeah, whatever metaphor works to help you just release the expectations that you're putting on yourself, and then through that, putting on your kids. And because when I was worried and looking for things, I wasn't as able to observe them and see what they were doing, right? Because I had that lens, that barrier between us, that I was looking for what I thought it should look like. I was kind of looking for them to say, oh, you know, I want to learn some spelling words. You know, I remember that was when I was like, oh, but spelling. Oh my gosh. But, you know, that all worked out. But that's when the pieces come up for us, right? But unless we're watching them in action and we're seeing them like writing when they want to write, like, so for my son, as my eldest, as I mentioned, it was not handwriting, but oh my gosh, he learned to type really fast, really quickly when he wanted to communicate online, right? Yeah. So, but if I was always looking for the handwriting, because that was an issue before, so I need to, you know, take special care with that thing, I would not have noticed and realized, oh, communication is the kind of important thing, not whether or not he's handwriting it. And look, he's being able to chat with people. He's getting his ideas across. He's picking up things from others who are writing to him, etc. I could open up my view because I was looking and able to look at them more clearly and just see what they're doing.
Yeah,
I think that piece of letting go of the expectations. So that's a piece we can watch. Like, okay, do we have, or even vision, like we have a vision of what it's going to be like letting go of that as well, because then you can see it unfold. But there was another piece about the, understanding that with reading, handwriting, some of these specific things that maybe, you know, the child's having a problem with are often very environmentally specific. Like they need you to be able to read directions. They need you to be able to communicate in a certain way, because maybe now everybody has computers, but back in the day, you didn't have computers in elementary school, you know, there to communicate. And so recognizing that, like, oh, so much of these, the deficit focus, like you mentioned, which is so important, is really about the environment. So when we change that environment, those are no longer deficits, and the gifts can really rise to the top.
Yeah, totally.
Well, this was fun. Yeah, go ahead, Pam.
I was just going to say gifts are the perfect way to think about it. Yeah. Like, so instead of going in with that, what is it that they are having a hard time with and I need to focus on helping them, versus looking for the strengths and the gifts and the way, the different ways, back to people are different, kids are different, the different ways that they still do things, still are totally capable of doing things. They don't need those specific skills. Those were very much environmentally related. Anyway, yes.
Yeah, right. And
go ahead, Erica.
Like, just thinking about, I think one of the tricky things about deschooling is if you're constantly looking for that, like what you were talking about, Pam, like they're going to ask for the activity that looks like school again, you know, like I'm just waiting for it, for things to just kind of naturally start looking more like school again. And so, I don't know. Yeah. That if we can look for different things instead, that would be more fun.
Right. Definitely. All right. I love that. Thank you so much, both of you, for diving into this. It was fun to just kind of, I don't know, take a look back and to just see, you know, how it still applies to so many things, and just appreciate everyone that's listening today and hope that you found it helpful on your unschooling journey or just your journey in general. So, and I do want to say, if you enjoy these types of conversations, we love talking about it in the network, the Living Joyfully Network. And also just when you're taking that leap and it feels a little scary, it is nice to have a community around you of people who have done it, who are maybe a little bit ahead of you on their journey, who are right there with you. You know, that can just feel so good to be around people that understand the words that you're saying, understand what you've been through with your kids. So we just really encourage you to check it out. We have a lot of fun there and I really enjoy it. So you can learn more about that at livingjoyfully.ca/network. So we hope to see you there, and yeah, just appreciate everybody. Thank you.
Bye.
I hope you found this episode helpful on your unschooling journey. And be sure to check out the growing podcast archive. The conversations never go out of date. You can find more information about my books, the Living Joyfully Network online community, and the Childhood Redefined Unschooling Summit online course at my website, livingjoyfully.ca.